CLNS Media, powered by betonline.ag. Go to clnsmedia.com/roll. Use our promo code CLNS50 for 50% off your first deposit.
It's Celtics coverage on clnsradio.com.
Tatum takes it. Makes it.
Oh, Hayward.
Flex on him, Jaylen Brown.
Dial in right now and share your thoughts toll free, 347-215-7771.
Well, hello, Celtics fans. Still have a gut visceral reaction to watching this game tonight, where the Boston Celtics fall to the Philadelphia 76ers minus Joel Embiid, 109-98. Third game in a row for the Celtics. They fall to 3-3 on the second night of back-to-backs this season. It's, you know, I'm not going to doom and gloom it, but I'm also not going to sugarcoat it tonight, folks. This is, you know, Celtics in general right now are a bit in trouble. We kind of thought that they were onto something, and, you know, they won two in a row, three in a row, I think. Now they've lost three in a row. So 500 basketball over the last six games. And what we're seeing on the court is not what you would call by definition Celtics basketball. What we're seeing is, you know, you take Kemba out for three games with the flu. They actually covered the holes in the dam. But the last three games, folks, you're losing to teams that you should be beating. And when you're selling me, the fan at home, a team that has aspirations that match that of the 2018-2019 regular season Boston Celtics going into the season, when you have those type of expectations and aspirations as you watch your team through, you know, 36 games, you're expecting a different outcome. You're expecting them to beat teams that have worse records than them and play good, tight games with teams that are on par with them. And tonight's a perfect example. Tonight you have the Philadelphia 76ers, who in record have played more games than you, coming in with 24 wins, 11 losses. And this is a team that, to me at least, Joel Embiid's out. He's got a torn ligament in his hand. He's having surgery, which means you're going to get a lot more Al, which anybody who's been a Boston Celtics fan for the last four or five plus years knows that when you get extended minutes of Al, you get two, three, four good games out of Al. And then Al starts to level off. And then we can have the argument about him doing the little things because the scoring's not showing up. It's very reminiscent of the argument that we have about Hayward this season. However, this is a game that should have been tighter than it was. This is a game that's continuing the theme from the last post game I did about missed opportunities. And, you know, I say all that because I'm disappointed. I just watched the game. I'm not thrilled with the outcome. I'm not thrilled with the effort overall. I'm in a crap mood. Now I have a co-host tonight who I'm hoping is going to spin me around somewhat into a more positive light, but I can tell you that on a Thursday night in January, I understand the doldrums of the regular season. I expect a better output from my Boston Celtics team, a team that's, you know, I don't know, outpacing expectations coming into the season. So I'm going to bring on my co-host. I know him as Alex. I haven't done a post game with him yet, so I'm really looking forward to how tonight goes. Alex, I'm not even going to try. I have a 16-letter last name. I'm not going to try to butcher yours. I'll let you introduce yourself. But, folks, my co-host on the air live with me now is Alex to break down this game. What do you got, Alex?
Hey, Joe. Last name is Kungu, almost like Kung Fu, just with the GU. So it's a little bit easier to pronounce. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I've shared with you some of the disappointment, though I'm not as low or as worried as maybe some are after on this recent three-game skid. And I say that because I kind of feel like in the middle of the year, like teams kind of go through ruts at times, and this is just, I think, the Celtics now facing their adversity after going through, I mean, most of this year with just pretty much nothing but roses and good vibes and everything going well. Now it's kind of their time now to kind of face adversity, and we'll see how they respond later this week. But, I mean, if you look at the three-game skid, just overall, to take like a step back, they lost the Wizards team that has beaten the Sixers, has beaten the Heat, have caught teams off guard before. They beat the Heat with half their roster missing as well. So, for whatever reason, they catch good teams off guard. And, you know, without Kemba, and I think they maybe, you know, didn't come in with, like, the right type of energy. I guess that happening. That Spurs game yesterday, they're playing a team that also just beat the Bucks by 20-plus. The Spurs are playing out of their minds right now. I don't know how much you've got to see of them. They have just been outstanding since their slow start. So, losing Kemba when you were making a run, you were down 7, and then basically giving up 5 free throws, and then which led to a 17-3 run, kind of deflated the stadium. Like, that makes sense. And then you come today against the Sixers, and it's the second game of back-to-back, and it kind of went the way most games go when you're on second game of back-to-back. You started the game off quicker. You kind of fade, and in that fourth quarter, they got outscored 32-18, and that ended up being, you know, the difference. Even after a slow start to the third, they were able to kind of rally and kind of go into the fourth with the lead. But, you know, like, tired legs get you. You know, the Sixers were well-rested. They're at home. They're playing with a little bit more spacing and a little bit more pace without Embiid. It happens. The Sixers just aren't a good matchup for us this year. And it's probably weird because we've kind of gotten used to beating them and beating them up a lot. So it's kind of it maybe it's a little bit weird for us now to like say that, but this year we're a small team, they're a huge team, and they've just really been able to really kind of bully us in a way that we're not used to. So it's not ideal. You definitely want to see wins. You want to see them keep pace with the Heat, stay within the second seed, but it happens, and I think it's more important now that they take care of these upcoming easy games now against teams like the Pelicans and the Bulls and things like that before they face the Bucks again next week. So there's still time to ride the ship, and you know, I just think this is our time to face adversity.
No, and Alex, I appreciate that. I guess maybe I'm still bathing in the spoiled New England sports fan type of entitlement feeling that I have, but when I look at teams that are geared towards a championship level, and you know, let's be honest, we're looking at professional sports here, whether it's the Celtics, the Bruins, the Red Sox, or the Patriots. In this area, this part of the country, every single season, we look at this team, regardless of the name of the team, we look at the team with its aspirations on that final goal, winning that final championship game to lock in the championship. And what we look for throughout the course of the regular season, whether it's baseball, basketball, football, or hockey, we're looking for the markers of a championship caliber team. And my point about the three-game slide is, regardless of the Spurs playing out of their mind as of late, Washington, yeah, I get it. They've won some games, but as a championship level team, you have to weather everybody else's Super Bowl, so to speak. I think this year, you know, if you draw a line of comparison over to the NFL, I think the Patriots also faltered in an ability that they've had in recent years over the course of the last two decades of rising to the challenge of the opponent coming in thinking that their game against you is their Super Bowl. Their game against you is their game 7 of the NBA Finals. Their game against you is the game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals. That's how, you know, game 7 of the World Series. That's how they come into these things. And the marker of a team that's aspiring towards that end goal is handling these teams as they come and are on a regular basis and not necessarily demonstrating a level of inconsistency. As I mentioned in my monologue, they're 3-3 on the second night of a back-to-back this season. Okay, that's a missing marker for me. and we're almost at the halfway point in the season. So as much as I appreciate that point of view of, you know, you got to look at who the competition is, who they've beat coming in. It's the back half of a back-to-back. It's not a personal attack on you or your point, Alex. It's just from my fandom, that's like an excuse. And we all know excuses are like a-holes. Everyone's got them and they usually suck. So before we dig into tonight's game, that was kind of my thought about this three-game slide. It's just, I'm not super down about it. I'm more disappointed because as a fan of this game, as a fan who watches Celtics night in and night out, these are the markers, the secondary level of stats that I'm looking for as a fan on the couch for a championship level team. And that's what I want. And again, I preface all of that by saying it may just be my entitled, spoiled New England sports fan of the last 20 years, you know, take on it all. But, you know, I don't know. I didn't like the way the last three games have gone. I thought, you know, I called the Washington game and I did the post game for it. I called it the game of missed opportunities. And it really was. There were so many opportunities in that particular game on Monday night for the Celtics to win and well, not only win, but actually take a lead. I don't think they led for a minute in the game against Washington. They didn't lead for a minute in the game against the Spurs either. Again, these are my little markers along the way when I'm looking at secondary level stats that just bother me. You know what I mean? And it's, you know, back half of a back-to-back works when you don't have a point guard, a starting point guard, all-star, who missed the last two with the flu and had a total of 5 games off or 5 days off between games. He's not unfresh. If anything, he's too fresh. Now, I know he sprained his left thumb during the game in the first half, but came back in the third quarter. You know, freshest of fresh legs go to Kemba Walker for the game. I mean, I don't know. So let's, you know, rather than dwell on that, let's dig into tonight's game. It's, you know, it is the topic at hand. Unfortunately, as I mentioned, it was not a good outcome for your Boston Celtics folks. They fall to the hands of the Philadelphia 76ers in Philadelphia, which just hurts even worse to me. Not necessarily best output from the team in town, but let's break down the game. Alex, you and I take a look at exactly what we saw in this one from a performance to performance level. So when you look at the Celtics performance first, anybody stand out to you as having themselves a great game?
Well, great would be a bit of a stretch, but I thought obviously Marcus Smart, you know, shot, you know, way above his averages. So it was nice to see. I actually thought their defensive energy was mostly good as a team. I thought offensively they got a little stagnant. Maybe a lot of that was due to guys like Hayward, Brown, who just really had really poor shooting nights, and none of them really seemed to get a rhythm. You can even throw Tatum into that group, though. I thought because Tatum was able to kind of get to the line, he played a little bit better pace than we've seen before. He didn't force as much as we've seen him in the past. I kind of thought he kind of weathered the storm, even though he had a poor shooting night. He actually played okay. But outside of Smart having a hot shooting night, Kemba having a hot shooting first quarter, there was no one really that played exceptionally well on the offensive end.
No, I really can't argue that either. I mean, Kemba had his, you know, his game about him. I at the end of the day, when I'm looking at the stats, and while you were talking, I was just glancing down because you had mentioned that you thought they played a pretty solid defensive game. But again, Celtics come into this game, they lose the turnover battle, they lose the rebounding battle, and one of the, again, secondary level markers that I look at, they're losing the offensive rebound battle almost game in and game out over the last couple of games. And it's just one of those stats that kind of stood out to me. I've been paying attention to it. Just bothers me a little bit. And even without Embiid, they lost the block battle. It wasn't even close, 5-1. I would argue that it just seemed too flat of a game for a team that was on the back half of a back-to-back. I thought with Kemba going out, with the ejection last night, you had fresh legs there. I don't know. I just, overall, I didn't really think that anybody had too great of a night. I'm looking across right now, and, you know, I don't know, Marcus shot well, I guess. I mean, you really got nothing out of Hayward. You got not, I mean, 35 minutes, you end up with 8 points. Now, I was kind of on his ass a little bit on Monday night because I said it was the quietest. I think he had 18. It was the quietest 18 I had seen in a while out of him. And I don't know if he's dealing with something, but the point totals have continuously gone down over the course of this three-game slide. And it's just something I'm paying attention to. Tatum, 15 tonight. Again, not explosive. Brown, my surprise, 6 points tonight. He was a negative 10 for the game in the plus minus category. Just an ugly game. I mean, it's hard to find a ton of stuff to talk about when the game was just kind of flat all the way around. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I'm also kind of looking at some of the quotes post game, and I think Brad is kind of noting the, you know, like the higher energy play, which I think I did see, especially like early on, they didn't have a slow start. You know, they went down 22-3 or anything crazy like that. I kind of really just feel like they just faded down the stretch, and not all of that is about fatigue or nothing like that. I think some of it is just also just giving the Sixers credit. Like down the stretch, like the team tried to like play small, play fast, attack mismatches, and the Sixers of like Thybulle and Josh Richardson, Al Horford and Ben Simmons, they just have a lot of good defenders. And on a night where like Hayward and Brown just didn't have any rhythm, it's like it's extremely hard to try to score on these guys. And I think part of that is just, you know, like giving the other team credit sometimes. Like the Sixers are a very good defensive team, a lot of good defensive players, and I just think down the stretch against the Celtics, like they got the better of them. That's really just how I feel about this game.
They had the timely possessions when they needed to have it. They got the stops when they needed to have it, and they got the buckets when they needed to have it. And that's really what it came down to. Every time the Celtics seemed to start a run with about 8 minutes to go in the fourth through the end of the game, the Sixers had an answer for that run. You know what I mean? It was, they had momentum killers one after the other. And it just seemed like that was stymieing any type of comeback opportunity. And that's the sign of a well-balanced team. They know how to lock it down in those final 10 minutes.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm just really in shock with the way Jaylen Brown played, kind of just to circle back to him. It kind of felt like a flashback to some of his earlier years where he just did not look in control offensively at all. And speaking of the losing streak, I think you can even kind of trace that back to starting with like that Wizards game. He's been pressing a lot. I felt like early in the year and for most of the year, to be fair, he just had he had more of a patience to him. He attacked the rim with more of a purpose. He didn't just try to use out athletic people. He used his big body to kind of create space and kind of like take his time finishing at the rim. And now it just kind of feels like he's pressing a lot. And if we want to look for kind of things to be concerned about, just the way he's playing and the way Gordon Hayward has just kind of looked, I don't know, maybe like a step slow, not as aggressive, slashing towards the rim like we saw earlier in the year. And those guys are like, you know, the Celtics are top heavy, and they need those guys to be really good. And if they're not really good, this team is not really good. So it's like, I mean, if there's kind of concerns to take away from that, it's that it's those two who are, I mean, if you look at it, they're the Celtics maybe like best rim attackers or, you know, slashers, whatever. And if they're not, you know, up to task, like it doesn't look good for the Celtics. Like that takes them from a surprisingly good team to just like an average team. And that's not, you know, that I think that is something to look at considering there was some talk about Hayward and his foot not doing all the way 100%. So, I mean, if there's a negative for me, it would be those two guys. And wanting to see them kind of like just kind of get back to how they were playing earlier in the year.
Absolutely. And I'll build on that Gordon Hayward point. I mean, I kind of alluded to it. I wonder if he's working with something or working through something right now. And if he is, you know, if I don't know, Alex, if you listen to the post games that we've done, I wish that you and I had done a couple more together so that way we have, we kind of know each other's vibe. But one of the things that I've been advocating is additional, specifically with the way the schedule is structured from now through the All-Star break in February. They're playing every other night minimally. And I think that this was one of three back-to-backs that they have going in from now till the All-Star break. And I've been advocating for more minutes for your bench players, more minutes for your secondary and even third level players. So I've been advocating for Javonte Green. I happen to think that the guy has an untapped ceiling. I understand he's 26 years old. He's not a kid. However, there's an electricity when Javonte Green gets on the court. There's a way in which the team responds. He brings in electricities. I wouldn't say it's Rozier-esque. It's a different type of energy that he brings, but it's palpable. You can feel it when he's on the court. And I wonder, granted, you know, Hayward's 3 inches taller than him. I 1'6'7", 1'6'4", Javonte being the 6'4" guy, but in the opportunity to go to some of the smaller lineups, I'd argue that Javonte Green could benefit from resting Hayward while he works through whatever it is he's working through. Because one thing that we know for a fact, Alex, is if you look at the start of the 18-19 regular season, Gordon Hayward was forced into that starting five. I'm not even sure he wanted to be in that starting five. He wasn't ready. He wasn't right. He wasn't ready. But Brad forced that lineup on us. And we saw that he failed when he's not at 100% or 90% of Gordon Hayward. It's not that he fails night in and night out. You have that night where he surprises you and drops 26, 27. But more often than not, he's somewhere in that 12 to 17 range, 12 to 18 range for point production. And I get it. We start getting into the argument of he's very much like Al Horford. He's unappreciated for all the little things that he does on the court. Okay, enough of that. You know, throw Javonte Green in, split the minutes a bit, give Hayward an opportunity to get himself right. And Javonte Green's not the type of status player in the NBA that can demand or gets pouty and can affect the team's output by regressing back into the role that we see him in now. So I don't know. I don't know how you feel about Javonte Green. Again, we haven't done a post game together, but I think that he could benefit off of, you know, reducing Hayward's minutes a little bit on the opportunity to play some of the smaller lineups.
I have split views on that, because on one end, like, I do think it would be ideal if the Celtics could play deeper into the bench, but I also have very, very minimal faith in their bench. Even tonight, Brad Wanamaker didn't play, which was weird, because he's kind of been a backup reserve guard pretty consistently for the team this year. Anytime Tremont has come up, he's very quickly taken a big chunk of Brad's minutes, and that's what bet on the team. So there's kind of a lack of, that seems like a lack of trust there. I like the energy that Javonte brings. I don't think it's a bad idea to play him. I think it also kind of gives more room to guys like Jalen and Jason, who, you know, like, they don't have to, like, worry about, you know, kind of like sharing the scoring load in that sense. So it could help with scoring balance and kind of like role optimization in a way. I don't trust a lot of guys on the Celtics bench. I think they're young. I think they're inexperienced. That's why I think they should be looking to make moves at the deadline to get bets if they're serious about winning this year, which they should be. But yeah, I think this stretch for the next month or so is really going to drive home the Celtics' depth question. And it's going to either show that the team has more than maybe we anticipated, or it's going to really drive home that they need more on this team. And I think the latter is going to end up being true in a sense, because it's just a lot of kids, you know, like you can't trust Carson. You can't, as Brad's showing, you can't fully trust Wanamaker all the time. You can only trust Cantor in situational matchups. Rob hasn't been back. Vincent Poirier has been in nothing. Grant Williams has been okay. Semi Ojeleye seems to be good or bad based on whether he can hit a three-point shot or not, and that's not reliable. There's just not a lot of guys who, like, I can trust, like, can give me 15, 20 minutes and give me the same thing every night in the 15 to 20 minutes. So I think that's probably why we haven't seen as much of Brad just kind of turning it over to the second unit as much as maybe he would like to.
No, I get that. I just think that he absolutely has to start doing it. And it, I don't know, you know, take this game in a microcosm, right? So you're looking at it as the back half of a back-to-back. You know what the schedule looks like between now and February 13th. You played your guys last night. Wouldn't, you know, Carson Edwards was DMP, coach's decision. Fall, coach's decision. Javonte Green, coach's decision. Wanamaker, coach's decision. You know, could you not have benefited by having those guys live and active tonight? I argue you could, especially if you're not looking at this the way a couch fan like myself is looking at this. Like, I look at this, as I'm saying, you know, I look for markers. I'm looking for what defines a championship level team. Well, if you're Brad Stevens and you're the coach of the Boston Celtics and you don't view it the way I view it as a casual fan on the couch, then I guess my question to you is, why wouldn't you play the other guys? Why are they DMP coaches' decisions? You know, that I don't get. I guess it's funny. I got hit up on Twitter for a response, and the question was, it was sent to me by Celtics on CLNS, and they said to me, you know, how good is Brad as a coach? Defend your position. And so, you know, my quick response was in 140 characters, like, for real. But then I wrote, he's consistent for sure. Needs a manageable group of talent blend, which I think was evident in last year. Now, you can hate the former point guard of this team. Alex, to know me, I'm in the host chair tonight. So if you utter that player's name while I'm in the host chair, you go into timeout. We just mute you for a while. I don't refer to the former point guard of this team other than in that text. However,
We don't talk about players that quit on playoff series.
He doesn't
exist.
We don't
talk about players that quit on playoff series. Nope. I agree.
Exactly. I'm still hurt. It's okay. It's like a bad breakup that you never really get past. I'm really never going to get past it. I'm honest about that. Now, for as much as a malcontent as that player was on this team and a disruptive force on this team, I also am a realist, and I lay blame at the feet of a coach that we had built up to such an elite level that we were mentioning him in the same conversations as Steve Kerr and Greg Popovich. I'm sorry. That was a mistake. That's being a realist. That was a mistake. Now, I'm not saying that Brad's bottom of the barrel. I'm not an extremist. I don't look at one or, you know, black or white. Everything's gray. So the different shades of gray, I put Brad just outside of that circle. And I do that because when you look at some of the elite coaches in this league, elite coaches over the history of this league, they've had personalities to deal with. They've had mental illness to deal with. They've had substance abuse issues to deal with. They've had a multitude of issues to deal with as coaches. Yet the elites find a way to manage that talent and extract the very best play out of that talent. I would say if I was picking a detraction from Brad Stevens' game, there are two that are glaring to me. Number one would be his inability on a talent-laden team to find a cohesive way to get all personalities on the same page. And what we saw last year was not necessarily just the starting five that was disjointed, but it was your second unit. It was your bench players that were disjointed too. And that was a detriment over the, you know, over the coaching, I don't know, sphere that is Brad Stevens. The second one is, I do think that in his game, he lacks a specific understanding of high leverage timeout and time management. It was evident to me last year. It was evident to me the year before when you had a different group. Brad Stevens struggles with knowing when to call that timeout to regroup or call that timeout to write that play that changes the momentum in a game because it provides you a high percentage shot on the court and it's executed. Those are the 2 points that I think keep him outside of that elite circle. And that's, you know, when I think about it, it's one of the things that I don't know. I float that theory out. I'm on CLNS Media's post game for the Boston Celtics. I'm not necessarily sure who else buys into that. I can see that our phone lines are banged, which is nice. We're going to get to some calls in a minute. I do want your take on Brad Stevens, Alex, but first we got to take care of the people to keep the lights on. So I'm going to run the promo and then we're going to come back because I want your take on Brad Stevens as a coach. Tonight's episode of the Celtics postgame show on CLNS Media is brought to you by HelloFresh. HelloFresh is America's number one meal kit. Get easy seasonal recipes and pre-measured ingredients delivered right to your door. All you have to do is cook and enjoy. For $80 off your first month of HelloFresh, go to HelloFresh.com/CLNS80. And don't forget to enter the promo code CLNS80 at checkout. HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit and a sponsor of the CLNS Media Celtics postgame show. Damn, that's a good promo for HelloFresh. I cut that promo. That's my voice, just in case it sounded familiar to anybody. But that doesn't change the fact that HelloFresh is probably one of the best things that's ever hit any generation. So whether you're a boomer or you're a Gen Z or it doesn't matter if you're an elder millennial that's still using HelloFresh. It's good for single people, busy professionals, families of all sizes. HelloFresh is America's number one meal kit for a reason. You're going to get easy seasonal recipes with pre-measured ingredients. You don't have to be a chef. You don't even have to be good in the kitchen. I don't care if you don't even know how to turn on the stove. They have all the directions that you need in your meal kit, pre-measured ingredients. Dude, you can become a 3-star, 4-star chef in front of whoever you're trying to impress, whether it's your kids, your girlfriend, your wife, your husband, your spouse, significant other, non-binary friend. It doesn't matter who you're trying to impress. It makes you an amazing cook. So go to HelloFresh.com/CLNS80 and take $80 off your first month with HelloFresh. I'm telling you, smartest decision you've made. Stop going to the grocery store. Start planning your meals. It's a healthier, easier way to eat. That's HelloFresh.com at CLNS80 in the promo code window to get $80 off your first month. All right. So, Alex, back at it. Your turn. I'd like your take on Brad Stevens as coach.
Yeah. So, for me, I think Brad Stevens is a good defensive coach. And I think I would even venture to say he's an elite defensive coach. Where my concerns are with him are pretty similar to yours, where I don't think he's kind of like the Steve Kerr type of coach where he can come in with a lot of talented players and just kind of like bring them together. And I think we saw a little bit of that last year, that you could blame some of the antics of a certain player. I do think like great coaches are able to kind of command the room when there's a lot of guys who are hungry and get them to focus on a common goal. And Brad kind of showed that maybe he wasn't that guy, which he'll probably have another chance in Boston to show that down the road. But as of right now, he failed his first test. I think offensively, he leaves a lot to be desired to me for the simple fact that a lot of what the Celtics run are kind of option-based plays, and he puts a lot of trust in players to just consistently make the right reads all the time, and that's great if you're a team full of veterans like the Warriors and Steve Kerr can just leave you out there and let you run split action and floppies and horn sets all day, and you will always make a consistent play. But I just think there's times where, you know, you're on the court with young guys like Jason Tatum, like Jaylen Brown, who you're relying on heavily, and I think there's more direction needed. Like, I kind of wish he had more of that Rick Carlisle, where it's like, no, I'm going to control it. I'm going to tell you guys where to go, where to stand. This is where I want this shot to go, in a way. And I think I wish he was more commanding of the offense and kind of like funneled his offense to the players that need to be taking shots more. I do think his ATOs were in the beginning of his career were like elite, and now kind of like as 6-7 years have gone in now, it's kind of just middle of the pack. Like he's good, not necessarily great. So for me, I just feel like he's a great defensive coach who leaves a little bit to be desired on the offensive end.
That works for me. I mean, trust me, I'm not trying to work you onto my side of the street. I'm just spitting how I'm feeling tonight. And, you know, I'm not feeling great. Again, you know, for anybody tuning in late, welcome. Celtics did not prevail tonight in Philadelphia. They dropped 109-98 to the Sixers, who were Embiidless. Sixers, they played a great game tonight. They outplayed the Celtics just about in every facet of the game. You didn't get your offensive contributions that you would hope for from your key players tonight. Just not a great game to watch, or, you know, sadly for Alex and I to have to comment on. I don't really, you know, the individual game-to-game play, I'm not sure is necessarily that important. The outcome sucked, and your team sucked tonight. And that's okay to say every now and then. But, you know, turning the page, because that's what we do in Boston, rather than dwelling on what we just had to watch, other than Kemba dropping 10 dimes in the third and on his way to 26 points tonight, is 50% from the field. And I think he was 5 for 11 behind the arc tonight. He had himself a game, but it's hard to celebrate good games when your team drops one that you kind of circled on your calendar a while ago. So Alex, speaking of the calendar, let's look ahead, my man. Here we are on January 9th. You've just dropped 3 in a row. Next up is the Pelicans, followed by the Bulls. And again, we're playing this every other night type of basketball, folks, from now for the next month. It's every other night or a back-to-back. That's what you have from now moving forward. So, Alex, looking ahead a little bit to Saturday's game, what do you think about the Pelicans coming in? I can't imagine that you circled this one as an L on the calendar a while ago or even a week ago. How do you circle it now?
Oh no, I do believe this should be a win. It'll be interesting to see if Zion Williams will play. This is going to be the second night of a back to back for the Pelicans. They'll be in New York on Friday, so they'll be traveling. You know, there should be some tired legs there. And whether they have Zion or not, I definitely think that the Celtics should be able to win this one. I don't know if comfortably is the right word, but they should be able to win this one pretty handily.
So let's dream a little bit, Alex. Let's say you get your debut as Zion on Saturday night, right? Because let's admit it, the stars are kind of lining up for this, right? It's a Saturday night game, NBA, Pelicans, Celtics. Let's say they roll Zion out in that lineup, right? Do you think that that's the type of night where Daniel Tice's minutes come severely down and you see an increase in Cantor? And do you activate Taco Fall? Do you buy into this media hype where you bring back that tournament view from last year and bring Taco into this mix? How do you play this out? Let's play fantasy. You get to be Brad Stevens going into this game. How are you setting your starting five and your backup center looking like?
Oh, no. I mean, to be honest with you, if Zion is playing, I actually have more confidence that the Celtics will win by a lot simply because of the fact that it'll be his first game back. There'll be a lot of jitters. They'll try very hard to feature him heavily. He's not going to be in game shape at all. He's not a shooter. And even with NBA spacing, we know to just kind of like collapse the paint on him. So I kind of think you don't really change much. You just maybe you play Shemmy and Grant more just to continuously throw big bodies at him. And you just like, you force him. You just keep forcing him into traps and congested paints. And you live off what's going to be a lot of, I think, kind of live ball turnovers. And I actually think if Zion plays, it actually bodes well for the Celtics because the Pelicans then kind of get away from what they're doing offensively, and they've actually been a pretty good offensive team. Brandon Ingram is playing out of his mind. Jrue Holiday's good. Lonzo Ball is having a really good stretch right now. But if you kind of stop their momentum, you know, it's kind of like last year with the Celtics when they played without that guy, and kind of like everyone was sharing the ball, everyone was like scoring, it was great, and then that guy came back, and it was kind of like it was his show again, and it got stagnant. I kind of think it's just a similar thing that happened to the Pelicans. So I'd play Shemmy, I'd play Grant, but I'd keep everything the same, and I'd be pretty confident the Celtics would win convincingly.
I appreciate that. That's a very logical way to go to it. I was going down fantasy land where, you know, Taco does not become a DMP for the night. He actually gets out there. They have a little bit of a mix up. Maybe it's 4 or 5 minutes, but I'd love to see it happen. But you make a lot of sense. I mean, throwing your big bodies at it, throwing Semi at him, throwing Cantor at him, just throwing body after body after body at him, I think it's a very smart play. It's definitely a winning combination. You know what I mean? Because you touched on it. A, he's not going to be in game shape. B, he's not even going to be handling game speed at that point. I think you can really take an advantage. Specifically, like you said, if the Pelicans try to feature him, good luck. You know, because the Celtics will pick that apart. I think that's circled on my calendar as at least a fun one to watch. And then that's followed up on Monday by the Bulls. So the Bulls, you know, the Bulls are what they are. I don't think, you know, I'm sure you speak probably a lot more intelligently about how the Bulls are pacing out right now. But 13-win team, lost their last 5, 3 out of their last 10 were wins. Not necessarily trending up, but you never know. Come Monday, again, you're a top seed. You're a 1-2-3. You're trying to keep pace with the Heat. You're flirting with that top 3 spot. You're going to get everybody's Super Bowl, just like the Bucks get everybody's Super Bowl. And right now the surging Heat are getting everybody's, you know, NBA finals game when they play them. So, you know, as much as it should be a win that you would circle on your calendar for a 13 win team, that's definitely on the slide. I don't know. Recent performance gives me a moment to pause. You?
Yeah, I mean, because we kind of seen even last year kind of like, well, for one, the game against Chicago last time, I know it was on Kemba, but they played us pretty tough, you know.
Yeah, they did.
They are a team that has played us tough in the past. Even last year, they even beat us at one time. Zach LaVine isn't playing great, but they did lose Wendell Carter for the foreseeable future. And they're kind of just, right now, there's a lot of, like, negative energy around them and their coaching staff. So I think this could be the type of game where, you know, the Celtics maybe build off momentum from the Saturday night win against the Pelicans and kind of, like, look to kind of continue it. They have Kemba, the game's at home, and they just kind of, you know, you just roll through and you kind of – and you're able to pull that one out. So you always have to pause because you never know what type of energy they might come out with. But I think this is another game that the Celtics should be able to win.
No, I agree with you. I mean, we're looking ahead a couple of games just to kind of fill some air, talk about where we think this team's trending. So, you know, you're looking at spinning 3 consecutive losses into 2 consecutive wins. I think that'd be great. It would be a good momentum builder going in up against the Pistons. Pistons right now are, you know, doing their thing, 14-win team. But like the Bulls, they've only won 3 of their last 10. So not necessarily trending up. But by that time, we're talking about, you know, it's the middle of January. It'll be interesting to see. But, you know, tying back to tonight's game, one of the things that stood out to me was, I love to find my positives and my negatives and everything. Tonight's positive is going to be, if I had to give a star of the game outside of Kemba, I'm definitely going to give it to Marcus Smart. Anybody that hears me do these post games knows that I'm a huge Marcus Smart fan. He's one of those grit and balls type players. He's going to give you his all 100% of the time. It's funny that 2 nights ago, I was on the post game lamenting that sometimes he falls in love with the three. He hits the first. He's definitely going to take five, six, seven more. Tonight he goes 5 for 7 behind the arc. Just has himself a game and a half. Again, in a losing effort to the I hate saying it. I don't even want to. Sixers. They lost to the Sixers tonight, 109-98. Not a great game overall for your Boston Celtics tonight. Again, bright spots offensively were Smart and Kemba. Outside of that, didn't get really great production out of Tatum or Brown tonight, and Hayward was kind of a bit of a ghost out there. Yeah, it is what it is. I guess when you look forward and you take a look back at tonight's game, it's a mix. I keep dancing across all the different stats. I don't know if I'm looking for something, honestly, Alex. I don't know if I'm looking for something to just pull out of this. I mean, I guess my negative prediction will be they're saying 1 to 2 weeks on Joel Embiid's finger surgery. I'm going to go a little bit further out. I mean, that finger looked nasty as he was walking off the court the other night in OKC. But I'll say that, say he's 3 to 4 weeks out. I think the Sixers fans are really going to get a dose of, from an offensive output perspective, the inconsistency in many minutes for Al Horford. I think one of the things that the Celtics were so successful in doing in previous seasons were managing his minutes appropriately and making sure that when Al was out there, you were getting the maximum output that you could get from that player. I think when he was forced while he was here into a starting role in multiple minutes, and not necessarily a starting role, he's always been a starter, but in extended minutes beyond his norm, you saw breakdowns in his game. The knees will give out. That's one of the things that the Celtics were very concerned about in managing his minutes, were managing his knees. The footwork that Al brings to the court is one of the quintessential hallmarks of his game. So I think the Sixers fans are going to see, you know, as bright-eyed as they were about Al's performance tonight, and he did have himself a great game. It was nice to see him back on the court. I hate to see him against the Celtics, but, you know, Al didn't have himself that bad of a game. Ultimately, though, if I have to pick a negative out of it, I think it's the future play of extended minutes for Al Horford. I mean, tonight gave you 19 points, grabbed 8 rebounds. He had himself a pretty decent game. He was 2 for 3 from behind the arc. Little cold, you know, killed it from the field too. It was 7 for 11. He had 17 points tonight, 7 for 11 shooting. He was a plus 19 overall for the game. I just think that extended time, I think you're going to see a bit of a breakdown in Al's game. Any positive negatives you want to assign to either team tonight?
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, I'll start with the Celtics. I think you touched well on Kemba and Smart. I push back a little bit too on Tatum. I kind of think he played a really good all-around game. He just didn't hit shots. He was 15-10. 4 assists, 3 steals, and a block. I thought his activity defensively was good. And, I mean, he hits maybe like a couple more shots that usually go down for him. And, you know, we're maybe talking about his night in a completely different context. So I just want to appreciate Jason Tatum, because I think a lot of people kind of base who he is based on whether he scores 25 or not. And I think what we're seeing this year is that he's probably a lot more of an all-around player and less the scorer that we thought, but more of the all-around player than we were expecting. So nights like this where maybe his shot isn't right, him still kind of being all over the place and making an impact in ways that, you know, someone like Jaylen Brown or Gordon Hayward didn't, is worth noting. Maybe not necessarily positives, but a negative is I'm starting to get worried about Daniel Tice. I'm starting to wonder if this has been a fun regular season kind of year for him so far. He's played well, higher than expectations as a starter. It's been fun. But, like, just watching the way guys like Al Horford, Tobias Harris at some point, even in games against, like, the Spurs, Wizards, and stuff like that, just kind of, like, watching these guys that are also kind of, like, 6'10", 6'9", but with broader shoulders kind of bully him a little bit. it makes me worry about the playoffs. It makes me worry about, like, can he be the guy that is even able to handle a series against Miami, Indiana, you know, possibly even Brooklyn, who had played Jared Allen and DeAndre Jordan. Like, can he survive in those series? And I'm starting to – and this shot out maybe, possibly, but the more data we get on him, it seems scary to be relying on that guy when it comes to actually trying to win. And I think the Celtics need to really hope that, one, either Robert Williams or Vincent Poirier comes back and takes a humongous step, which I don't know if you can count on, or they need to really seriously start to look at trade deadline options, because if you're serious about winning, I'm not sure if you can rely on Daniel Tice to be the guy in the middle. From the Sixers' end, I think they kind of stuck to form from how they played without Joel Embiid, where I think their offense just looks more flowing and guys are playing at a faster pace and they're not really waiting for Embiid and trying too hard to feature him. It looks good. I think he was spot on without Horford. I think one thing that the Sixers aren't doing as well as the Celtics is managing his minutes, because he's a guy that has the type of knees where you can't play him consistently big minutes throughout the regular season. And he actually, I think they brought him in thinking like he's going to be like this backup for Joel to just play big minutes to kind of ease Joel, and not necessarily considering that they also need to be managing him as well. So I think that is going to be something to watch for the Sixers, and it's going to be interesting to see if the Sixers can stay consistent, because they've played good teams really well. Like, they've blown out Miami, they blew out the Bucks on Christmas, they've beaten us three times. They played the top teams really well, very, very similar to the Celtics last year. But it's these games against like the Magic, the Wizards, Hornets, things like that, like these games where it's not the primetime matchups where they fail. And maybe that doesn't matter in a playoff series, but when it comes to seeding and trying to avoid, you know, the Milwaukee Bucks and Giannis, that can matter, as the Celtics learned last year. So I'm just going to be watching to see how consistent they'll be able to be without Al Horford. I mean, Joel Embiid.
No, I think that's a great point. And let me piggyback on that just a little bit. You brought up a phenomenal point about Daniel Tice. And I think you're absolutely right. When you look at like one of these things is not like the other, it's when you look at the starting five, Tice is kind of that odd man out. You know what I mean? Like, to your point, as a 6'8 center, when you go up against bigger bodies, broader shoulders, your tenacity can be outshadowed by just pure athletic ability. And when you're looking at the playoffs and how that forms and who those teams are and what those matchups look like, chances are they're going to have a fairly decent big man who's at least 6'10, you know, to your point. And how Daniel Tice matches up against that is a big question mark. And I couldn't agree with you more, Alex, about if you're not going to get Robert Williams stepping forward or Vincent Poirier actually touching the court and getting an impact out of them, then you're seriously going to have to look at that position. If you've evaluated your team, if you're Danny Ainge and you're looking at the current constitution of your team and you think to yourself, all right, I have an NBA championship caliber opportunity here. I have the potential to be that one of those final two teams. I'm just X away from that. I would argue that it's a productive, larger, big man in the middle, because I do think that you're pretty well squared away at just about every other position on the floor, both first and second line. I like this team. I really do like the blend of youth and experience. I like the blend of tenacity and talent. This is the perfect style team for Brad Stevens' coach to manage and cultivate. I would argue to agree with you that he may be a center away from that constitution of a true NBA championship caliber team. That's just, you know, my view in on it as well. I think you really, that was a spot on you know, assessment of where this team may have a hole going into the trade deadline, and what pieces could potentially be assembled to rectify that hole without creating another hole in another spot where you don't have a next man up. You know what I mean? Because, you know, as we all know in the NBA, you have to match salaries. You have to, it's so complicated. The cap science is something that you could literally turn into a full-time job, even with a degree in mathematics. So understanding that cap and understanding what you have to lose to gain and how that affects your overall team composition, that's one of those things that I hope that they can figure out. I'm sure they, you know, they have people that are cap specialists, no doubt. But, you know, from a fan's perspective, when I look at the way the team's currently constituted, yes, I would absolutely assess Daniel Tice's play so far through the regular season as fun. That's a great adjective for the way he is out there. He hasn't hurt you. He hasn't necessarily helped you win a game, but he's disruptive enough. But when you escalate the talent to the next level, is he able to ascend to that next level? And again, to agree with you, I'm not necessarily sure he's capable of that. You need other pieces in play. And if you can't rely on the other large men to be healthy and contributing, you know, I don't think you should expect anything out of Taco other than, and, you know, media stunts in this year, at least, but, you know, meaningful minutes and contributions from Robert Williams with his footwork, Vincent Poirier coming back and actually, you know, ascending to a position, even 70% of what he was, I think offers you an upgrade over the Tice spot in regards to overall team output and efficiency on the court. So that's a very interesting position on the court to watch in the coming weeks. Good point.
Yeah, for sure. And I think outside of just Daniel Tice and his one-on-one ability against centers, his lack thereof, rather, it's not just about him losing his matchup. It's what it makes the other people have to do. It means that guys have to try to hard trap or have to double all the time and go off their man and then scramble out and try to, like, also contest shots. And then on the other end of the court, they're running up and down and trying to you know, move, cut, playoff pick and roll. It puts everyone to work harder when there's a clear weak link on the court. So when we're evaluating Daniel Tice, I know it's, you know, he's a good guy. You're rooting for him. He's had a lot of really good moments this year, but I just think
quintessential
you know,
underdog
on the fence
story.
About it. Yeah. Yes. But if you're trying to consider, whether the team does need to upgrade that big, because I know that that's been kind of been a contentious battle amongst the fan base. You have to think that the impact having a weak link on the court does to you, and how that gets, you know, extrapolated in a playoff series even worse. And I just think that right now, like, the Celtics having to do so much of the doubling and trapping and the scram switches and all that running up and down defensively is a lot of work. And maybe that's part of the reason, like, they are so stagnant on offense, and they haven't been cutting as hard as we saw in the beginning of the year. Like, it's wear and tear. It's a lot of work to do all that type of stuff. And I think just having a big they can trust down there, like when they had Aaron Baines and stuff like that, they could just play people straight up. They didn't have to do as many of these kind of, like, gimmicky traps and things like that. They were a more competent defense. Even last year with all their problems, they were still as good defense because of that. So, yeah, like, I just think at this stage, there's no denying that if they want to advance farther in the playoffs, they need to start considering looking for an actual big.
No, totally. So, folks, we are just about out of time. I want to thank you for tuning in on a Thursday night in January to listen to Alex Kungu and myself, Joe Show, bringing you the Celtics post game on CLNS Media. Celtics fall tonight in Philadelphia, 109-98. It was not necessarily a great game to watch. So if you didn't watch it, you didn't miss much. But if you don't listen to this or download the Celtics post game from CLNS on iTunes, you are missing out on a great show. Each and every game after the final buzzer, you can catch us live doing the broadcast on Blog Talk Radio. We always tweet out those links as well as our handles. And you can also find us on Blog Talk Radio when you go under the CLNS Media tile and look up Celtics Post Game. I am Joe Show. Alex Kungu was my co-host tonight. Alex, you got anything to plug tonight before we hang it up?
Nothing. Just catch me on Twitter at Kungu_NBA, where I tweet a lot about the NBA.
Boom. That'll be my next follow for sure. I, as always, am at Joe Choquette, Choquette on Twitter. And don't hesitate to check out my podcast that I put out on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Music, Google Play, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, radio.com. It is called Brain Droppings. It's the Brain Droppings podcast by Joe Show. I'll be dropping a new episode tomorrow, January 10th, dealing with all the shit that's happening in the real world today. Again, for Alex Kungu, I am Joe Show. Thanks for tuning in. Celtics lose 109-98 in Philly. Have a great night, folks. Alex, thanks so much, man.
You know Dasher and Dancer and Prancer and Vixen, Comet and Cupid and Donner and Blitzen, but do you recall the most famous reindeer of all? Come on! Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer had a very shiny nose, and if you ever saw him, you would even say it close. Come on! Come on! All of the other reindeer used to laugh and call him names. They never let poor Rudolph join any reindeer games. Then one foggy Christmas Eve, Santa came to say, come on! Rudolph, with your nose so bright, won't you ride my sleigh tonight? Then all the reindeers loved him, and they shouted out weekly, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, you go down and